to episode 36 of the Pipe and Slippers Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Roger Kirby, and joining me tonight in Beirut is Mr. Stephen Rudkin.
Yep, good evening from the war zone, that is November in England. We seemingly have made Guy Fawkes Night, or Bonfire Night, a month-long experience, at least, for us all. So, endless fireworks every day. So apologies for any knocking and noises you hear in our audio this week.
And my dog will occasionally go off his rattles, potentially. So again, apologies from my end on that. So we shall press on nonetheless.
Just a side note on that. I find it odd. I heard earlier today, South Africans celebrate the 5th of November. I find it very bizarre. It's a British thing. It's like us celebrating Independence Day. It's just not right. So I find it odd that apparently all over the world, a lot of people are celebrating Bonfire Night.
It's an economy boost, for want of a better word, but don't get me started on a rant about that. So
anyway.
Ooh, it was a big one. Under attack. Right, so what are we going to cover off first? I think we should hand over to yourself whilst I duck behind the bunker and take cover, and we'll check out our last week's classified results.
Here are your classified results for week 8 of our Pipe and Slippers Fantasy Football Leagues. Starting off in the Move the Sticks League, Gobias Industries took down Scratch and Nift after Jonathan Stewart did just enough on Monday Night Football to win 93-86. Rudders Niners pulled out a close one, 71.9-71.54 over I've Made a Huge Mistake. Huge importance was Monday Night Football, and Moncrief's 1.8 for the Niners was just enough to overcome Cotchery and Hilton for the mistakes. New York Bozo slipped to a loss, 93-139, to the Cowboy Crusaders. The Crusaders easily took to the win thanks to Drew Brees. The D-Train won again, 101-86, to move to 6-2 thanks to another great week from Gronk. The Playmakers won, 105-62. The Playmakers stud, Todd Gurley, with another 20 points to help the Playmakers move to 500. Eskimo Bros database also went to 500 after a 104-88 win despite playing Matt Stafford at quarterback. Moving on to the Hall of Lame League. A couple of lineup mistakes by the future Hall of Lamers left them 2.5 points shy of the Real Americans American team, and Dylan moving to 5-3. The Intimidators won 110-107 in a close high-scoring fixture against the G-Men. The Intimidators hit a thrice of 20s. Julio Jones, Todd Gurley, and Matt Ryan putting up big numbers for Tony's men. Magicians Alliance won 104-91 over Bootzilla, mainly thanks to a stellar performance by Adam Vinatieri with 16 points. The Stockholm Stiff Arms lost to Forest Green Army in the basement battle. Forest Green Army scored 106 thanks to Sneed's 19 points in that blowout in New Orleans. The Forest Green Army are now 2-6 as well, matching Stockholm's record for the season. Gronk, if you're horny, won 98-79 over the Macclesfield Mannings, who now sit at 3-5. Gronk, if you're horny, really should be called something to do with Brady, if you're horny, after James's quarterback scored another 30 points for him. Unruly Moustache scored 116 points and easily won over Zach Stacy's mom, who put up a dud, with Kelsey being the top scorer with 10 and his team only managing 47.7. Moving on to the Pipe and Slippers League. Silent Assassin took down the Deflated Footballs 105-87 thanks to a solid performance all the way down his lineup. Lombardi slapped the One Cheddars 120-100 with his Patriots doing the business. Gronk, Jules and Gutskowski all scoring well for the Lombardis. Gronk, if you're horny, and James won in this league also, 103-100 against Sharkies 1. Despite the performance of Luck on Monday Night Football, helping Gronk to the victory. Moving on, It's Like Giving Candy to a Baby won 98-66. Breeze was his quarterback. Enough said there. Compromise Underpants won 101-86 over Crunch Time, sending the Crunch Time to a 1-7 record and fifth loss in a row. The Underpants, helped by a nice tidy performance by Cam Newton on Monday Night Football, helping him to a win. And finally, in your matchup of the week between our hosts of this show, the Negatrons, lost 94-135 in a blowout victory for Roger's Honey Badgers. So I am ashamed to say, well done, Roger, and back to you.
And on that very, 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 very joyous note, we rejoined here at the studio with myself, grinning from ear to ear, although the series is 2-1. But hopefully I'll get to rectify that at some point during the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think we meet again. Obviously no extra games in the divisions against one another this year, so... 2-1 to myself at the moment, but it was a bad week for us last week. The two of us, I think, both going 1-2.
I lost an absolute heartbreaker for the second week running against your brother. I had Jericho Cutchery and T.Y. Hilton needing basically to score 2 points. I think it was 2 points more, full points more than... in Dorset, and that didn't manage to happen. So that's 2 weeks on the trot. So that's put me 3-5 in the move the sticks, and I have two and six in move the sticks, which has put me really behind the eight ball. So I've gone and made a few bold moves this week to try and strengthen the roster.
Yes, indeed. You're obviously only two games back technically. Division 500 leads the way. So it's not the end of the world yet, but a few trades you made.
One with yourself, John Stewart and Mark Ingram for Julio Jones.
I think you caught me on a good day and undersold in a way.
Maybe. I mean, literally, what I was just literally doing was trying to see where I thought there was, you know, I was willing to give up, you know, my better players to potentially secure strength in either other areas of my team or, you know, flesh it out a little bit with options and strength across the board. The problem was Julio Jones was great, but then my running backs were really struggling. You know, Martin was solid, but he was, especially when Tampa being in a few shootouts, and we're always in it, but the moment that they get behind, obviously they go away from the run. So I think Martin went for Cobb. I'm hoping that Cobb and Green Bay are going to sort that out. I brought in DeSean Jackson, who's coming back from a hamstring injury down the stretch in a Redskins team that are still in that NFC East race. It was a load of risks. It was about not sitting still and trying to make a move that could potentially, you know, find a way of getting those two games back.
Yeah, it's worked out really nice with Cobb coming in as you let Julio go. I think overall really good. Obviously, probably the Eifert move could be the one that is a little bit of a loss for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's magnified by obviously Thursday night football.
But you obviously planned it beautifully, so Carl didn't have the time to slot him in for Thursday night.
Yeah, but I didn't play him on the basis that
the train.
The moral. I don't know if it was morals or wondering if he'd get it. What would happen with the trade? But I didn't play him. I do think that Vernon Davis, whilst he might not go off instantaneously, I do think he's going to quickly leap to the top of that roster.
The headline from Kubiak says he's going to play a big part of the Broncos' offense in a double inverted commas. I'm doing with my hands on an audio podcast.
Well, he ticks all the boxes if you think about it from a Kubiak tight end, because he can block. He's proved that for the 49ers, and also he's still athletic enough and still quick enough to make plays. And with Peyton's lack of arm strength, anything that's going to be able to, where he doesn't have to throw outside the hashes, is surely a good thing. Although Manning looked a different quarterback the other week, so it'd be interesting to see how he looks in Indianapolis this week.
Yeah, I think as well, Davis often can stretch the field a bit and send him downfield, even though Manning's probably not going to throw it to him. It's another receiver taking a defender out of the game.
Yeah, and I think in terms of the bubble screens that they run with Demaryius Thomas, anything where you're getting linebackers and safeties freezing them and pushing them back is only going to help those plays.
Yeah, so moves there in the Move the Sticks League, and for the Broncos, a bit of trade action. I think it's about time we hit the awards.
Let's do this.
From last week. So, your Moves of the Week nominations start with Tony and the Move the Sticks League. He was flip-flopping, it seems, on the transactions, which is always fun to look at when you see somebody undecided, changing their mind two or three times. Went with his mind over his heart, played West from the Chiefs over Dez Bryant. He obviously thought he could come back in, but decided to go with West, 18 points and the win, even though he had Bryant in there at the start of the week. Anthony in the Move the Sticks League, picking up off the waivers, Ben Watson, playing him 20 points from that shootout in NOLA.
Crazy, crazy game that was.
Dylan in the Hall of Lame League. Nice defensive stream. Picking up and playing the Bengals against the Steelers, 13 points. Over the Vikings, who was playing the Bears. So, Vikings are good defense, but they only got 8 points last week.
Yeah, and he's assumed against the Bears it would have been a lot more.
Yeah, if you pair those two up, you think the Vikings is the better play, but he went Bengals, and those 5 extra points helped him to a win over somebody. I'm not quite sure who that might have been. I'm keeping quiet. And then finally, Pipe and Slippers League, Stephen, the silent assassin, picking up and playing Nate Washington, a tidy little 13 points and a win for the Assassins.
A lot of decent moves there. I think the Nate Washington move is one that kind of I quite like, because it's a deep league. And I don't know about you, but there's occasionally when I'm sat there in front of the TV and just messing around on my iPad, I'm fishing for that player, a potential difference maker. And there's certain players you look at and think, oh, yeah. And sometimes, there's been occasions where I've brought people in and then, 2 days later got rid of them because, you have those self-doubts. So I think I'm going to give it to the Silent Assassins and Nate Washington on the basis that finding players that are in the waiver wire slash, sort of free agency after the Tuesday is around and plugging them in and playing them. Any move that you can get anything out of those guys is a bonus.
Yeah, the waiver wire is really thin on that league. So well done, Stephen. I look forward to beating you this week. The mistakes of the week. I've made a huge mistake award. Move the Sticks League. Carl benched Alex Smith, 27 points, and decided to play Tannehill. He was going up against the Pats, only 7 points. So wrong quarterback decision there. Danby picking up Michael Floyd off waivers, but then not playing him. 16 points, which
we've all been, win. We've all been there.
Myself, in the Hall of Lame, benching Barnage, who got 11, went for Eric Ebron, who only got 2. I think it was purely because I was going to watch Ebron at Wembley and thought I'd be actually having something to cheer on, but that failed. Paul and Sharkies won in the Pipe and Slippers League, benched Ben Watson. So 20 points, played Reggie Bush. Sadly, no points and an ACL tear. So,
and the potential lawsuit to go with it.
Yeah, bad week for Paul and for Reggie. And then finally, Bruce and Crunch Time had both West and Thomas for the Chiefs in his lineup at one point and then benched them both ahead of the game. For Randall and Gore. So benching his Chiefs, who combined for 34 points over Reuben Randall and Gore, who got 9 in total.
Okay, I'm going to stick in the Pipe and Slippers League
nice. This
week. And given the fact that that league has to anyone who's not part of that league, is a dynasty league, and we have an extra flex player in that league, and that flex player can take on the form of a running back, a tight end, or a wide receiver. So I'm going to go with Watson, dropping Watson, on the basis that you've got 2 opportunities to play that tight end, either in the flex slot or the tight end slot in itself. So with that regard, given the fact that it was going to be a shootout and he is turning into the single red zone threat for Drew Brees, I think he's got to be even in a league that's not as deep as that, I think he's a must start tight end at the moment.
Yeah. So thank you, Paul, for your message last week that rounded off the podcast. But you have picked up the I've made a huge mistake award this week. Yeah, it's quite fun, that Pipe and Slippers League, with the extra tight end flex options. I've often played 2 or 3 tight end sets this week, but I think that's partly for my love of tight ends and thinking that I could have made it as one myself.
Raising.
Excellent stuff. That's the awards done for another week. Seems the fireworks have rescinded a bit in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, you've made it brilliant. That was amazing. Can't believe you just said that.
Anyway, touching on the Pick'em standings, update.
Back in the race.
Yes, good week for yourself. Going 11-3 in week 8. I went 9-5, but that puts us tied at the top of the Pipe and Slippers group.
It does.
1,020 points. It's a 66% win-loss ratio. 79 correct picks. Some other little stats to note. We are ahead of the majority of the experts across all the NFL podcasts and shows.
You did a bit of digging on that. I didn't dig as far as that. I had a look at where we stood overall, and had a look at some of the leaders were doing sort of overall, and that was incredible. Some of those records.
It seems to be quite a low overall score for the majority of people this year, but we are one ahead of Chris Wessling. We are one behind Kurt Warner and four behind Kevin Patra of the Around the NFL. They are, in fact, the only two from all the NFL.com pick'ems experts ahead of us, Warner and Patra. Most importantly for us UK fans, we are two ahead of Neil Reynolds.
Good, that's all that matters. That's all that matters when you come down to it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I genuinely do not miss Neil Reynolds. That's the only thing about the NFL is come playoff time when Game Pass decides to be naughty with us and not allow us to watch the UK games live because of the blackout rules, and you've got to get it on Sky Sports, and you've got Kevin Cadle and Reynolds and Judge Reinhold.
Yeah, so we're doing all right in the pick'ems. We're top of that group. On the Pipe_Slippers Twitter feed, I tweeted out a link if you want to join that league and that group. So we have 13 players in there, and we're sitting 1 and 2, so it's quite nice.
Did you expect anything else?
Well, no. As I posted on there, what did we say early about what rises to the top? Going back to some earlier tweets of the season, talking about cream, and Anthony suggested other things rise to the surface. Anyway, there we are. Guess we can look ahead to week 9.
Yeah.
Really, week 9.
Well, in discussing week 9, I think we need to address the Thursday night football.
Yes, I got a little ahead of ourselves.
You sort of didn't. It was relatively smooth transition.
Still week 9, so.
Exactly.
We're recording on Saturday evening here in the UK, and 2 days ago we had the Thursday night Ohio battle. I watched a bit of it last night, and the Bengals obviously won 31-10. Your takeaways?
Bengals are a well-oiled machine. The two-headed monster at running back is good. I mean, Jeremy Hill doesn't look the runner he was last year yet. Bernard just, you know, is picking up the workload. They have so many weapons on the outside with Green, Sanu. I mean, Tate was even around, Jones. And obviously the tight end is probably, you know, the guys on the NFL, around the NFL podcast talking, probably the second best in the league. Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Gronk's head and shoulders above everybody, but, you know, yes, you know, you could have argued one time Jimmy Graham, but the way he's performing this year, Eifert definitely stacking up against him. He's becoming a real difference maker. The line looks good. The defense looks a lot better. They look a complete unit. I mean, you know, we've watched the Browns now. I think it's 3 out of 4 weeks, and they are a disappointing outfit. I mean, you know, I thought Manziel did well enough, but you know, whether it's Josh McCown piloting that ship, or whether it's Manziel, or whether it's, you know, Aaron Rodgers, I don't care who's piloting that ship. It's that ship's sinking.
Yeah, I think what was great about what the Bengals did during that game, it was obviously close at halftime, that they do what we never really see teams do very well, and it's only really the Belichick-type teams, the Patriots, that do in-game adjustments very well, and they seemingly looked at what Manziel was offering them in the first half, which was a bit of movement and escapability that opened up a few plays that the Bengals changed, adapted, and as Lewis apparently said at halftime, they got to keep him in the pocket, and that's what they did. And it really struggled and showed that Manziel can't play from the pocket.
No, but I think again that Manziel isn't that quarterback, and again it's back to, you know, we've touched heavily on Kaepernick, but and a little bit like RG3, is that these guys are who they are. You know, you can't fit, you know, the old saying, you can't fit a, you know, a round peg in a square hole. It just doesn't work. So I don't quite understand, why these guys are trying to be made into distinct, you know, pocket QBs. I'd like to have seen them a game plan that was allowing Manziel to roll out a few more times. I don't think I saw a play action pass.
Amazingly, Phil Sims was stating this. He thought that should happen and amazed it wasn't happened, which is rare for Sims to get something right. But
yeah, I mean, you know, I completely forgot, to be honest, that Sims did mention that. He mentioned that live on broadcast. But yeah, I was flabbergasted because I think the way to simplify it is that Manziel's never going to be a quarterback that can make full. You know, he's never going to get to his third read. So what you do is you simplify it. You give him half field reads. You're getting him rolling out. You're shifting that pocket left. You're shifting that pocket right. You know, and if he's going to do any damage from inside of the pocket, it's going to be on hot reads that are, you know, quick slants and bubble screens and dump offs and stuff. So yeah, I just think again it comes back to that whole thing of, you know, tailoring the offense to the skills of the QB and as opposed to the other way around. And I think the big thing that I'm surprised about is, and Bookie Books always talks about it, is that traditionally, you know, defensive-minded head coaches are a lot more sort of embracive of a renegade, out-of-the-box, you know, off-the-cuff quarterback because they can understand the threat that poses to the defense. And Pettine just seems to have mismanaged the whole quarterback situation horrendously. But then you look at the talent, you know, how many drops there were in the game. You know, the amount of times it seemed to just smash into the face mask of a wide receiver. I actually lost count on one. But at one point I paused, I rewound the tape because it was just like, really? Is that? Yeah, it has smashed him in the face again.
Yeah, that first half... It was interesting you talk about, obviously, Manziel not getting to third reads. You saw sometimes when he did all right in the first half and they made some plays, it was because he was so quick to look at his first read and get away from it that he wanted to run out of there so quickly, which actually worked a few times. But there were some throws that he tried to make where he sees the first read, it's no good, and then he just, off the back throw, throws it over the middle, and so fortunate not to be picked off a couple of times. And yes, at times these receivers have got to help their quarterbacks out. There was a play that over on a third down in the first half threw out to the wide left, and as you say, just smashed, I think, Benjamin in the face mask.
Yeah.
Went straight through his hands, and at times we give the quarterbacks a bit of a hard time and think it's all on them, but these receivers have got to help out.
I'm openly a Manziel apologist because I genuinely think if you put him in a situation to succeed, I think he can. But at the same time, I think it's all about having a creative coach. And I think another fundamental issue that you've got with the Browns is that you've got Farmer and Pettine are on two completely different pages. I mean, I hate to say it, but that shit needs blowing up again, doesn't it? I mean, they're just not moving forward. That personnel group is one of the worst in the league. I mean, they've got probably one of the worst secondaries in the league. You know, the line is the old line is pretty good, but you know, on the outside,
the team they were up against, the Bengals, and you see all the stats about how they've got such almost stability and longevity across their players. The amount of players they draft, they keep, much like the Packers. And you look at the Browns and it's almost the complete opposite. Their drafting has been abysmal. And just touching on Manziel one last time, you just never saw, obviously a short week, and McCown being injured, but you just saw that wasn't a game plan and a scheme that's got anything for Manziel. And we've mentioned it before. You've got to adapt to the quarterback skills you've got.
Just piggybacking off that, I have a sort of philosophical question for you, I guess, is that, you know, take the Browns or let's take the 49ers potentially. You know, take the teams that haven't got a quarterback. You know, coming into the next draft, do you potentially take that quarterback, let's say within the top 10, and put him into a bad team? Or do you, say, build the O-line? You know, build both lines. So you build the D-line, the O-line, and then, you know, you find skilled players and you build that way, and then you find the quarterback after. Essentially, do you find the quarterback first or do you find the quarterback later?
Yeah, it's interesting. You see, obviously, in last year's draft, the Bucks and the Titans have both gone quarterback. Fairly new head coaches in both situations, so they've, although that's not worked out now for Wiz. But,
exactly. I mean, that's partly the reason that I asked the question. I think it's a real interesting philosophical debate as to how you go about building your franchise.
I mean, you obviously have to look at each individual draft and look at it and go, okay, who's coming out this year? Are they an upgrade on what we've got? People are talking. Stafford could be let go because the Lions are blowing that up. But are you really looking at the draft next year and thinking there's a better quarterback there than Matt Stafford?
Yeah,
you're
going to put him into a lineup with an O-line that's struggled, a coaching staff that's potentially in flux, and you know whether the new GM is going to bring in a new coach or Caldwell's going to be given another opportunity. I personally think, and as much as Bill O'Brien has absolutely bundled that quarterback room without a shadow of a doubt, I think that the way that they've gone about it and not going out and getting a quarterback that they don't feel is right just because it's a quote-unquote first-round quarterback and, you know, he's got to be brought in. And I think that's the way you go about building your team. I think you find the quarterback later, potentially, but then I guess the flip side of that is you're given more time with a younger quarterback. It's one of those, is that, you know, by the time you've got that team ready to go, and then you can say, okay, that's 3 years, we've drafted, you know, interior lineman, we've drafted a premier left tackle, we've managed to find our edge rusher, we've managed to find that, you know, picked up a few guys in free agency, and you know we've nurtured the talent that we've got, and now we just need to find that final piece. Well, because of the bumps along the way that you're going to get with that approach, because you've maybe got a journeyman quarterback behind you, you might not get that third, fourth year.
Yeah, look at somewhere like the Jets. Obviously, they had a lot of defensive talent on that roster, but obviously, Todd Bowles' first year in. They could have taken a quarterback. They had a high-ish pick, but they took Williams. They're looking strong on that side of the ball and adding pieces around and happy to roll with Fitzmagic and Geno Smith if there wasn't a quarterback worth taking. And it looks like the rest of the roster's doing all right.
Exactly, and they look like a team that's primed to potentially take a quarterback. You know, next year potentially, and really kind of, you know, grow together. But they're going to have a quarterback that's going to be potentially behind a better line with a defense that's going to, you know, give him shorter fields, you know, and give him opportunities to succeed. I think that, you know, that is the way forward. But obviously, the patience factor is huge, because you could be out the door before you're given the opportunity to draft that quarterback in the third, fourth year.
Yeah, I think that going back to the 49ers situation, it's a real difficult one, because a lot of people, I'm not really sure that Tom Sula is going to be the head coach next year.
I'd be surprised if Balky's there as well. So,
yeah, so you think that Kaepernick, it's still probably going to be better than what you could pick up in the draft next year, maybe. They've got so many other holes. I mean, they obviously lost a lot of pieces lines.
Goff's supposed to be the number one consensus. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's massively early in the whole process, but he has been talked about as the guy. But again, it's that whole thing of, you know, you bring him in and put him into a shaky lineup. The guy could be, you know, shot to pieces within 2 years because he's in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, I genuinely worry for Mariota with the amount of hits he's taken this year. Again, now he's into his second offensive scheme with Malarkey, and then on top of that, is Malarkey going to be given the job? He could be into his third one within say 12 months.
Yeah, it'll come down to who the head coach is that going into next season. So it's never a good situation for a quarterback to try and learn and start in the NFL with all these changes.
And look at the Dolphins. You know, that offense was struggling horrendously when they fired Philbin. Yet they didn't get rid of Lazor, and they got rid of the defensive coach, Campbell. And there's no coincidence that they were terrified of stunting Tannehill's growth.
Yeah.
Because he had been making strides under Lazor last year. And, you know, some of the issues were related to the defence and some of it, obviously, the offensive scheme. And maybe that, that Chip Kelly-esque offence has been found out. But they're petrified. You know, you paid a guy $100 million, and then you're going to ask him to in mid-season to potentially learn a new playbook. Not a chance.
It's certainly going to be a fascinating off-season coming up with obviously so many head coaches already changing, interim people involved, a lot of quarterbacks taking steps back this year.
The Black Monday could be very black.
Yeah, very black indeed. So that's long-term to look forward to. This weekend of matchups, we've got some games tomorrow. Anything taking your fancy? Obviously, that 6 o'clock window UK time. We've got Green Bay at Carolina, which will be on blackout for us. So,
yeah, St. Louis, Minnesota is an interesting one because that's going to potentially have wild card implications.
Yep, and it's the newcomer taking over the role of best running back in the league. Pushing on Peterson with Gurley coming in. So
yeah, and a guy that's seemed to have come back into the league with a lot more forgiveness than others, shall we say.
Yeah, obviously, the interesting thing I quite want to see from the Vikings is Bridgewater's progression. He's obviously struggling a little bit this year as they've introduced Peterson, and it's not really gelled necessarily the way you'd like to think it would have, but they are still sitting nicely positioned and winning games on that defense and the way they play for Zimmer.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to say. I think if St. Louis can go on and win that, you know, with that style that they've got, then you know they are legitimate contenders. And the problem that they're going to have is that can you see three teams coming out of the NFC West? It's
best thing for them at the moment is that they've got a 3-0 divisional record. Is it right? No, 3-0. But they've beat the Seahawks, which is obviously going to stand them in good stead in the tiebreakers. So.
Yeah, and another one to keep an eye on, I think, is Tennessee, New Orleans. You know, New Orleans are seemingly getting their act together, and will there be that positive, you know, Dan Campbell-esque, you know, reprisal of a team under Malarkey? And obviously, Mariota is allegedly going to be fit and healthy and back. So
it's interesting because you didn't hear all of the same kind of issues that like Philbin had, that he had lost the locker room and he's just not a motivator. And
who was it that was talking? I think it was Andrew Brandt on Ross Tucker was talking about the owners are from Houston and maybe watching them capitulate in Houston was a bridge too far. So
So it doesn't mean the players weren't happy with Wiz and didn't like that whole setup. They just weren't getting results and
they didn't. They kept the GM, didn't they? Interestingly enough.
Yeah. Well, for the time being. But
well, yeah.
Obviously, some people say it's not much point really changing a GM during the season. There's not much he does now. The trades are finished.
But surely that whole philosophy, the whole GM philosophy, is about players. You know, these guys are already well into their draft preparation now. You know, scouts are traveling around the country. So, I mean, I don't know enough about the internal workings of the foot, of of American football organisations, but I can imagine that they're well underway in terms of having an idea of where they want to be going.
Yeah, obviously, if you've got a team that are out of the playoffs, essentially, like the Lions and, well, you could say the Titans, but that league still being won by a 3-5 team, that you, if you're calling it a dead season, now's the best time to get that start on the personnel things for a new GM, build relationships with the current players and get a head start before, obviously, if a Black Monday GM firing, it puts it all in turmoil at that time of the year, I guess. So,
watch this space.
Yes. I'm quite excited by the later games tomorrow night, seeing Peyton go back into Indy. I'd love that to be a high-scoring game. You think with Luck versus Manning, but obviously that Denver D could cause Luck a bit of problems.
And Chudzinski is the new OC there after Pep Hamilton and his power running game eventually succumbed to Pagano wanting to go out in a blaze of glory with his guys, I feel.
Yeah, I've not not checked the stats on this, but it seems we've had more OC changes or DC changes through the result of head coach firings, etc., that this season, and I can remember so a few offensive that might be changing in the coming weeks. Should be fun to watch.
Yes, without a doubt, to see if there is actually a bounce back.
So I think that just about rounds us off for this week.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else that we need to cover. I think we went off on a little bit of a tangent, as always, but it was nice, it was pleasant.
As you were mentioning there, bounce back, we both need to make a bit of a bounce back in our leagues this week.
Yes.
Got a bad week 8, and we're still looking all right for some playoff action. Obviously, Pipe and Slippers League, we sit first and second seeds, so we're doing all right there.
Yeah, and I'm struggling in the other two, and as I said, lost a couple of heartbreakers, which, you know, by less than a point in the last 2 weeks has been a real bitter pill to swallow. 4-4 would have been right in the mix.
Yes. Still in it though, so we look forward to another week of fantasy and another week of NFL action. And I am at Stephen Rudkin on Twitter.
And I am at Roger M. Kirby on Twitter, of course, because that was what
Speaking
we were talking about.
Twitter, this podcast is obviously Pipe_Slippers, and been a bit disappointed that the Twitter have changed their logo icons this week.
I don't like the heart. I'm not a big fan at all.
Not down with it because I don't love the stuff I'm favouriting. I like like button.
No, it's favourite is it's favourite is that it's something that kind of interests you or a point or something that you like. The love and the heart. I'm just not a fan. Needs to go.
Too much. He's copied Instagram. Apparently.
Why do these companies feel the need to go out and copy something that's just be happy in yourself and who you are. Twitter.
Even Apple do it far too much after the passing of Steve Jobs, it seems. They seem to be copying other brands with big tablets like the Microsoft Surface Pro. They've copied it now with the iPad Pro. Anyway. We could rant about technology all day, but we will leave you this week with some rather hard-hitting messages from Tony to Matt Castle, Eddie Lacy, and Bruce.
Hopefully my team gets a thumb out of their ass, plays a lot better. Hopefully Matt Castle learns how to throw a football to the guy that has, you know, this jersey on and throws up a couple X's for me on Sunday. Packers. Need them to step up. Can't stand them, but I need them to step up. It's time Eddie Lacy becomes the guy I drafted, you know. I drafted him with, like, the second pick. He's, like, useless. But hopefully he can step it up. Evans and Winston, I'm rolling with Tampa this weekend. We'll see how that goes. But no matter what happens this weekend, I'm sure we'll meet again in about 6 weeks or so when the playoffs start. And I'll send you packing for real. You can enjoy that beautiful, I guess, winter. I don't know if you guys have winter over there. I don't know. But enjoy it. Enjoy the beautiful weather. I'll enjoy it here. Enjoy watching football this weekend. I have a 3-day weekend this weekend, so I'll be chilling. Maybe I'll even do another one of these. Bruce, you need to do one of these for real. I mean, I haven't seen your ugly mug in a while, so time to show everybody else. And they didn't even know you're a Canadian, man. Step it up. Talk to you later. Have a good one, brothers.
Been sipping a tea.